Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello, and welcome to Hotspots. I'm so glad you're here. The topic today is the deteriorating state of our global environment, which is experiencing a triple planetary crisis of climate warming, pollution, and biodiversity loss. I'll be discussing the triple planetary crisis and some of the solutions that are possible with my guest today, Andrew Dumbrill. Andrew has spent more than 30 years working with environmental groups, both at the national level in Canada and internationally at the Arctic Council and International Maritime Organization, which is known as the IMO. As a co-founder of the nonprofit Equal Roots, Andrew focuses on centering communities and developing policy to reduce pollution and emissions in the marine shipping sector, and he also works with civil society and Indigenous organizations on strategic planning and campaign implementation. Andrew supports Inuit treaty organizations in Canada, and he's worked closely with the Inuit Circumpolar Council, which was the first Indigenous organization to obtain provisional consultative status at the IMO. He's an advisor to the Clean Arctic Alliance, which is a coalition of NGOs advancing solutions for sustainable and low-impact shipping in the Arctic. And he's part of the global initiative, Maritime Beyond Methane, to ensure that LNG, liquefied natural gas, has no place in a sustainable shipping future. Thanks for being here, Andrew. It's so great to see you. So I want to start with the question, how do you view the overall state of the global environment today? And why is this situation referred to as the triple planetary crisis?
Yeah, thanks, Kay, for inviting me to your podcast. Looking forward to the discussion. I'll answer the second part first, just to give some context on a triple planetary crisis. Some of your listeners may have heard this term, and it's really United Nations coined it a number of years ago to refer to the interconnected crises of climate change, pollution, and biodiversity loss. And putting an emphasis on the interdependence of those crises that they can't be taken in silos because one feeds the other and it needs to be looked at holistically in order to tackle them all together. And there's a reason why there are three crises: pollution, biodiversity, and climate. For instance, on the pollution side, more than 7 million people dying prematurely each year due to pollution. It's an incredible amount. And 9 out of 10 people worldwide breathe air that contains levels of pollutants that exceed WHO guidelines. So that's the pollution crisis that we're facing. On biodiversity, the International Union for Conservation of Nature has looked at species at risk and endangered and threatened. And more than 50,000 species are threatened with extinction today. So that's the biodiversity crisis. And on climate, which tends to get most of the airtime, I think you're quite familiar with some of the emergency behind that. The last 3 years, hottest on record, with both 2023 and 2025 nearly reaching 1.5 degrees and 2024 hitting 1.55 degrees. So we're tracking to hit averages beyond 1.5 degrees. And sea ice is at its lowest in recorded history. The last 10 years in the Arctic have seen many thresholds being crossed. It's clear that from a climate point of view, we're in an emergency, we're in a crisis. And so that's the triple planetary crisis, is putting all three of these together and seeing how they overlap and unfortunately feed each other and need to be tackled together. We are in an emergency, and we can see from the science and the data that we are.
You focus on maritime shipping, and that, of course, moves much of global trade around the world. Talk a little bit about why this sector is significant when we're considering these environmental crises.
Shipping is at the intersection of these crises, both contributing to it and part of the solution. And so I think that's really an important piece to remember, that this is an industry that contributes quite a bit to air pollution, invasive species, translocation, underwater noise, in-water pollution, black carbon emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, including methane and other super pollutants. So it's clear that they're contributing to all three of those. But the industry has a unique role to play in providing solutions. And, you know, a term has been coined in this sector, and it's known as shipping at the nexus of the triple planetary crisis, or for short, you know, shipping nexus. And really, that way of looking at those impacts and solutions is meant to prioritize solutions that are at the nexus of the triple planetary crisis that contribute to all three. And so we can respond to the urgency of what's needed. So if we look at solutions that have that nexus or interconnection, for instance, like slowing your ship down, slow steaming as it's known, that creates less underwater noise. So that's a biodiversity. It creates less pollution and less greenhouse gas emissions. And it reduces the chances of whale strikes, which is another form related to biodiversity. So that's a solution at the nexus of the triple planetary crisis. It's a shipping nexus solution. It touches on all three. So this way of looking at the sector and the solutions is to prioritize that. So to prioritize slowing your ship down, it can have immediate effects. So that's the concept of shipping at the intersection of these crises and the solutions that exist within the industry.
So how's it going getting those solutions implemented? Is the shipping industry responding and slowing the ships down and doing other things to limit noise and so on?
It's not enough, clearly, for the emergency that we're facing. And, you know, you and I witnessed this a couple of weeks ago when we were at the International Maritime Organization talking about black carbon emissions from shipping. In many respects, there was a very unfortunate outcome because we still don't have binding regulations to reduce black carbon. And again, black carbon is a really good example of a pollutant that's at the nexus, the intersection of in shipping. And the solution also is right there. As you well know, black carbon impacts human health, increases the risks of heart disease and cardiovascular ailments. It lands on snow and ice and melts snow and ice. And so it reduces the albedo effect in the Arctic. It contributes to local warming. It also, you know, impacts habitat for marine species and also birds and fish. in the Arctic. So there's a biodiversity piece, and it's connected to livelihoods and indigenous communities and harvesting and transportation. Indigenous communities use ice as highways, as transportation in the north. So it reduces that ability, that mobility for indigenous communities. So by switching to cleaner fuels, or what's known as polar fuels, which is the conversation you and I had 2 weeks ago at the International Maritime Organization, it's a solution at the intersection of the triple planetary crisis, because by switching to polar fuels and reducing black carbon emissions, you're actually dealing with all three of those crises together. So this is what we would call an urgent, needed solution, because it deals with all three of the crises.
In case people are not familiar, black carbon is the soot coming out of the smokestack of the ships. Black carbon has other sources as well. Wildfires and industrial developments can release incomplete combustion of fossil fuels, makes black carbon, this fine particulate matter that goes into the air and then settles. And it's particularly harmful in the Arctic, which it was very disappointing that the International Maritime Organization chose once again to kick the can down the road, so to speak, and did not take action to address this issue, which has been on their agenda for, I think, now it's been 16 years. And they've asked for updated proposals. And so it's still on the agenda, and they'll be talking more about it. But I know a lot of us who work on the issue feel like it's just urgent to get on with it, and that this is a very straightforward and achievable solution to just burn cleaner fuel, so we don't have that heavy fuel oil that's causing this black carbon to be released around the world, and especially harmful in the Arctic. So let's talk for a moment. I know you're very familiar with LNG, liquefied natural gas, and it seems to be on the uptake in the shipping industry. And a lot of people think, oh, it's clean, it's natural, but it's really a problem. And if you could discuss a little bit about it, why is it a problem for the climate? What are the alternatives to LNG?
Yeah. And, you know, agree with all that you've said about black carbon. A black carbon is known as a super pollutant because it has roughly 1600 times the equivalent impact of CO2. Because of some of the reasons that we've discussed about it landing on snow and ice and increasing local warming, especially in the Arctic. And methane is also a super pollutant. And taken together, black carbon, methane, and ozone, that contributes half of our climate problem, anthropogenic climate problem. Those three super pollutants. So it's really important that we not only focus on CO2, and it's a familiar greenhouse gas, and there's a lot of attention paid to it, but oftentimes we're missing half the problem, which is these super pollutants. And so, as you say, G is in some circles looked at as a climate solution, and it's 80 to 85 times more potent than CO2 at warm air climate. And in the solutions space around black carbon, many are saying, well, why don't we just switch to LNG? Because there are some lower emissions associated with black carbon. But switching out one pollutant for another, a super pollutant for another, obviously is not part of the solution we want to see. So I think it's a really important point, the issue around LNG, and it's 85 to 95% methane. And and the super pollutant, and it's not a solution within this sector to deal with black carbon or to deal with the climate issue.
Are cleaner fuels, I know cleaner fuels are an interim step. Fossil-based fuels are an interim step, and there's cleaner versions and more polluting versions, and we want them to use the cleanest possible solution that's available today. But in the future, they're going to be even cleaner fuels that do not make these emissions. How do you assess the progress that's being made toward those new fuels of the future? Or is that happening on a trajectory that's going to be getting that in place by the time that it's needed?
There's a lot of talk about what's the fuel of the future. And generally speaking, that's an important discussion. More research, piloting, investments need to be made into, you know, truly zero emission fuels. But there's so much we can do right now, almost overnight, to reduce climate emissions from shipping. One is to this mandate, regulations around black carbon, and a global mandate for polar fuels, which is what we heard a couple of weeks ago. These types of fuels are still fossil fuel based, distillate fuels as they're known, but there's a lot less black carbon associated with them. And they're readily available. You can bunker throughout the globe. And so overnight, we could see between a 50 and 80% reduction in black carbon emissions just by using these cleaner distillate fuels, or what's known as polar fuels. So we can do that now. We can do things like reducing speed. And I talked about some of the benefits associated with that, not only for the climate, but also the other parts of the triple planetary crisis. Investing in wind. Wind is a propulsion system, is a fuel on its own. And we've seen some trials across the open ocean, which are reducing fuel burn by 35%, saving money, reducing emissions. So investing in wind is quite important. Making your ship more energy efficient. Again, there's the carbon intensity indicator that's being discussed at the IMO, and that's meant to set targets on what your ship should attain each year with efficiency. By hull formations, by waste heat, by other technological investments in your ship, you can reduce emissions. All of these operational, and the use of wind and cleaner polar fuels and slowing your ship down, they can all shave off emissions from operating a ship. So that's what the industry really needs to be focusing on right now in the next 10 years to buy us some time to get to these cleaner fuel solutions. We'll get there. Much more research has to be put into it, and they need to be truly zero emission, immediate climate solutions for the sector, and not necessarily waiting around for the silver bullet of a cleaner fuel, because we're still not there yet with developing a global fuel that's going to be zero emissions and readily available from a shipping perspective. So there are many ways to reduce emissions from the shipping sector, you know, 30, 40, 50% over the next 10 years by focusing on more operational measures and investing in wind. And also, you know, another aspect is shore power, ships plugging in when they're at berth. That can reduce a number of health pollutants, you know, like particulate matter and black carbon near ports. And you can plug into cleaner electrical grids rather than using heavy fuel oil and residual fuels when you're waiting at berth. So the list is quite long of measures that don't involve these newer, yet to be proven zero emission fuels that can actually contribute to solving some of the climate crisis in the sector.
How can individuals help who are concerned about the situation? What do you think is the most effective thing for people to do? Is it getting involved with groups? These decision makers that we're talking about here that regulate the oceans, of course, is done internationally through the International Maritime Org, which is an agency of the UN. You know, it's all by consensus. And when things are not in consensus, then it's much more difficult to move ahead. But how can individuals have an impact on these decisions?
Yeah, it's always the perennial question, right? How do we have hope? How do we act? How do we influence this space? I will say, and you mentioned it earlier in the podcast, 90% of all goods that we consume and use come by ship or delivered to us by marine shipping. Cell phones and clothing and food and building supplies, just look around your desk. It's all come on a ship. So consuming less means less pollution. It's that simple. So there's something everyone can do day to day is be very conscious about consumption and making sure that we're using what we need, not just what we can have at any moment. So that's the first thing, being really conscious about consumption. The second is prioritizing justice and equity in not only the shipping space, but in the systems and the societies that we live and work. Repeating some of these, the inequalities, historical inequalities, you know, based in colonialism, isn't going to get us to the place we need to be with a long-lasting systemic change. So interrogating that piece, that justice and equity piece in our lives, I think is very important, whether it's education and awareness. And I guess the third is, I think it's important, as you say, supporting groups, especially supporting groups in Pacific countries, least developed nations, marginalized populations, to have their voices heard at regulators or policy spaces like the International Maritime Organization. It matters immensely that these voices are heard in these discussions in order to bring an equitable lens to some of the solutions and bust through some of those systemic issues and have long-lasting solutions that are Eurocentric or North American-centric. We really need those voices and Indigenous voices as well in that conversation. So there's three things: consuming, bringing a justice and equity lens, and supporting groups in Pacifics and least developed nations and marginalized populations in order to really make a change in this space.
I want to thank you for sharing your insights and for all the work that you're doing to address these things and to make people aware of the problem as well as the solutions. It's really important work, and I thank you very much for everything.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kay, for the invitation. It was really great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for chatting with me, Andrew. Our environment is seriously stressed, folks. And for those of us who are following the international debates about what to do and how to address climate warming, pollution, and biodiversity loss, progress seems excruciatingly slow. Too little and maybe too late to break the downhill slide to a darker future. We are literally running out of time to turn things around, and it's absolutely alarming we don't see more urgency from our leaders to get on with common sense solutions. Indeed, it's going to take a movement of people demanding that our leaders respond if we hope to see things change. I know they've got a lot of distractions. Trump and the MAGA extremists and sycophants are trying to deport millions of non-white people and immigrants, rounding them up, putting them in camps. Absolutely outrageous. And the Epstein files and the bombing of Iran and on and on and on. But that's just the United States. Thank goodness there are other countries, such as Canada, working more constructively to address these issues. At United America Network, we're working to build a clean and healthy future, as well as a functional democracy that respects the rule of law, rejects fascism, and seeks liberty and justice for everyone. Thanks for being here, and I hope you'll join us again next week for Hotspots.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire, on United America Network.